All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is episode 102 of American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. Today, we're going to be playing you the latest Doug and Dave Intel report. Now, this comes from the Dave Hodges, thecommonsenseshow.com. Once or twice a week, we have the Intel report, so please check that out over on Dave Hodges' platform. That's thecommonsenseshow.com or thecommonsenseshow.tv. Please subscribe to that. It's $2.99 a month, and you get to see some really good interviews, especially me and Dave's interaction. We are breaking down the Brooklyn shooter based off of his psychology background and my law enforcement military background, and it turns into a pretty good conversation. Once again, always question the narrative. Have these conversations with your friends, with your family. If you like this, please share it with others, and without further ado, thank you for listening.
Hey, everybody. Dave Hodges here. Welcome back to the CommonSenseShow.tv. And I'm back in the saddle, 100% healthy. And today, actually yesterday, I had my first really hard workout. And so I think I'm back. And so it's good to be back. And wow, do I think I had COVID? Actually, I do, although the tests were negative. But I had a lot of classic symptoms. But I'm here, and we've got some serious things to talk about. I have... prided myself in, before my media days, involved in the alternative media. I used to give, I'd made radio appearances. I would give talks to Kiwanis and Elks and Tea Party people, types. The Tea Party wasn't around then. But back in the 90s, I would do 20, 30 presentations every October, November, December after the Kennedy assassination, particularly after the JFK movie came out. And I got pretty good at knowing how to spot false flags, cover stories. And we're going to be hitting that tonight. And so we've got, well, we've got a guy on here who has professional training. And he puts my knowledge on the inside to shame, except I do know the patterns of history. That's about the thing I bring to the table. But our guest, Doug Thornton, here on the Doug and Dave Report, Intel Report, definitely has the experience to piece this together. And we're going to talk about two things here. One is the Brooklyn shooter that I'm very conflicted about. And the other is the two imitator DHS agents that greatly compromised Secret Service and exposed the First Family to unparalleled danger that we haven't seen since Reagan was shot back in the 80s. Doug, welcome to the show, man. And by the way, let's give a disclaimer here, okay? Doug and I've talked about this. I, as much as I hate Obama, as much as I hate Joe Biden, and they're just despicable human beings, despicable, I never want to see anything happen to them in their official capacity as president. I don't condone presidential assassinations. That's not how we do business in this country, or shouldn't be. And I know, Doug, you echo that too, right? I believe in political change.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it doesn't benefit anybody or any movement out there, especially not for the conservative movement. You know, we already have enough problems within the Rhino Republicans and then the limp-wristed Republicans that we elect every year. You know, we want
Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, yeah. We want a real change in this country, a real grassroots change. We need it's time to shift gears and kick these people the hell out of office and to start over. But that doesn't mean I want to burn down the Capitol. It doesn't mean that, you know, I want people to go in and burn down the White House. I like my country. I love my country. You know, so, you know, I think the most peaceful way we can do it, the better.
I agree.
Because if you look throughout the world, anytime you start to do the violent revolution thing, that government quickly turns tyrannical and unleashes a military upon a population. And the country never goes the same again, ever. You know, we need to avoid that.
I agree. And I just want to make sure we're clear for the record here. Doug and I might hypothesize about potential assassination intent, beta test for an assassination, but in no way, shape, or form does that mean we're for it. In fact, actually, we're quite against it. I want Biden to stand trial for China, for Ukraine, for what he's done as president, which is illegal as hell. He may not have the capacity to stand trial, but I want him to be held accountable, and I want Susan Rice to go to prison and the rest of Biden's cabinet. I want them all in prison, but I don't want one of them to be harmed. But that doesn't mean we're not going to speculate, because whenever you have the penetration of the First Lady's security, you have to talk about false flag. You have to talk about assassination possibilities. Doesn't mean we're for it. So enough of that. We've given the disclaimer. So FBI, stand down, because I ain't talking to you. And Doug, you want to start with the Brooklyn shooter, because I'm confused by this, and I'm interested in your insight, because I'm not sure what to think.
So in episode 101 of my show, The American Vindicta Show, I broke down what a lot of people have been messaging me, asking me if I think the guy was a programmed person, if he was a shattered personality, if he was part of a government project. Sure. You know, or if it was staged and he's the patsy, the fall guy, or if he was part of something that the government allowed to happen. I'll just go ahead and say it can be any one of those, because nobody knows, right? It could also just be the guy was crazy and he went on a killing spree. There's plenty of people who do that. Now, I went into great detail about Project MK Ultra. Mm-hmm. Which is a verified CIA operation. They got their asses sued off multiple times. You know, and it also went MK Ultra, not only affected from military, law enforcement, doctors, congressmen, judges, to mainly kids in college, but also affected people in Canada as well. They also did it to 127 people in Canada. So, you know, we know these government operations were out there, and they were, what was MK Ultra? If you don't know, MK Ultra was a brainwashing project. Originally it was out there to try and find out if people were secondary agents for the communist regime of the Soviet Union. Well, that never worked out, because you used copious amounts of LSD and then barbiturates, psilocybin mushrooms, marijuana, copious amounts of alcohol. And you know what you end up doing? You end up just making people really drunk and intoxicated, and then they just talk. Doesn't mean it's true or not. So the project never really worked for that point, but they did find other things. They found out how to mess with people's psyche. They found out what type of medications, quote, or drugs that are out there that can make somebody susceptible, which is the perception of being susceptible. When you dope someone up who's already mentally unstable, okay, you're mentally unstable, and I'm going to put you on this trajectory. You might be a little resistant to it, so I'll dope you up a little bit. And then you might be a little bit more resistant to it, so I'll just trickle the dosage here and there, until you become very willful to do it. And then you're susceptible to me speaking to you or giving you all these type of innuendos. And I put a picture in your mind through using drugs, through using barbiturates, through using alcohol, and I make you perceive a thought and then act upon that thought, either consciously or subconsciously. That's what MK Ultra was able to accomplish. All right. Now, that sounds complicated, doesn't always work, but when it does work, the victim has no idea. And the victim is the perpetrator of the crime. The victim is always the perpetrator of the crime with this. Even if they agreed to be a part of the testing, which some people did, you don't know what the outcome of that will be once you're tripping on acid. You know, so it is what it is there, I guess. How did I wake up with this knife that's covered in blood? Well, I took copious amounts of acid. So that's you. I believe there are times that we've seen active shooters, active killers is what they're called now, or mass killings, Aurora, Colorado, the stuff that happened in Vegas, the stuff that happened in Parkland, Florida, this guy in Manhattan, this guy in Brooklyn. I believe not only are they ideologically based, which this guy was, he was part of the Black Liberation Movement, the Black Liberation Army, which is a, if you don't know that, communist regime, a socialism, communism regime, anti-American, anti-constitution, anti-guns, anti-white, extremely racist, racially led by extremists, or what we normal people would call terrorists. So he had that going for him. And like Sirhan Sirhan and many others out there who are these programmed killers, he had a diary. He had something for law enforcement to say, oh, look, he's been talking about this. He's been saying he was going to do all this, just like Charles Manson. Been saying he's going to do all this, and then he enacts it and he does it, right? His diary was on YouTube or social media or Twitter. He was clearly a person who was mentally unstable. MHMR, more than likely. Mental health, mental retardation, possibly. May have been influenced by narcotics. I don't really know. He doesn't have a criminal background from the last time I checked. So this guy just kind of appears out of nowhere with this manifesto. And then it takes a level of thought and training to do the next steps, to plan where to attack, to plan where to kill the most amount of people. Within the realms of active shooter, it's never done out in the open desert. Active shooters are never done out in the open woods. Why is that? There's not a target availability. With active shooters, active stabbers, active killers, there needs to be a target availability. So there needs to be as many people as possible for my target, which makes my time and what I'm about to do, die or go to jail for the rest of my life, worth it. So he found a place within the substation where there's always going to be a large transient population of people. Transient mean there's always going to be foot traffic. It's going to be easier because they're going to be boxed in based off of cars on a platform. I'll probably just be able to take my pistol and go from left to right, pulling the trigger. I should be able to hit enough people. He also planned with a distraction device, the smoke bomb. You got to understand the planning for this, though. You have to know a little bit of tactics here. I don't know where he learned it. Maybe he learned it from a movie. Who knows, right?
I have a hard time with that. Doug, let me interrupt your flow here because I don't want to get too far down the road that we can't go back and ask these questions. First of all, the social media profile, I looked at that and I go, I smell Lee Harvey Oswald, where they wrote a fake diary. They created him to be a fake Marxist. And I went through that with you before he came on air. And I don't need to go through all the detail, but a fake persona to cast Lee Oswald as a pro-Castro revolutionary, and his organization had a member of one, him. And then you had James Earl Ray with King, and he had a diary. You have Sirhan, and he had a diary. And I could go on and on and on.
The Unabomber.
Exactly. Okay, so I go on and on and on. Now, that's one thing. So I'm already suspicious of a fabricated background. And they also said, here's another parallel. Lee Oswald was spoken to by James Hostie of the FBI 10 days before the assassination. And they made Hostie a fall guy within the FBI for not stopping him, which is total BS. And now you've got the FBI saying they had actually talked to this guy. Okay, so obviously they didn't do a very good job. In other words, it's the same freaking cover story again. And here's some questions I have about the forensics you brought up. the level of sophistication of this attack was good. He used smoke grenades. Okay. He learned how to, he knew how to herd people into, like you said, a confined area for attack. And this morbidly obese man with the cameras magically off manages to get away. Okay. And so this speaks to me. This wasn't a guy that was BLM, hates white people. Let's go down to the subway and shoot up white. This does not fit the MO of an emotional shooter. This was a planned event in my book. Okay. You're the expert. Take apart my view.
So there is one video capture while he's going through the turnbuckle.
Okay.
The turning aisle, excuse me. And you know, he's got the obviously orange or yellowish jacket on with the reflective vest. He's got a hat on. People were saying he had a gas mask on. It was a dust cover mask, the COVID mask.
Sophistication again, though.
Right. So once again, one of the things in law enforcement that we hate seeing is whenever we have cameras, we want to see your pretty face in case there is any application of crime, then we can identify people, right? Well, with COVID, there was none of that, which there was a crime spree all throughout the world because of it. But in New York, they still have plenty of the mask mandates. So you can't exactly verify. You could verify based off of certain factors. You could say, okay, I have a general suspicion that a guy matching this description, wearing these clothing, so we want to find these clothing, that hat, that mask, you know, face or based off this description, we'll detain him as a, you know, possible person of interest. And that's what he originally was put out for, was a person of interest. Now, the sophistication, okay, for this attack. For one thing,
before you go there, let me just categorize from my view what I see, and then I want you to address it, okay?
Okay.
I don't see this as a spec ops arrangement. I mean, this guy is spec ops, and he carried out this with a high degree of precision and obvious training, but it's not the guy off the street that's doing random shootings. I see it somewhere in the middle. Okay, so I'll just shut up here, and I'll get out of your way and let you go.
So I'll give it to you as the old fish in the bucket aspect. Okay. Like shooting fish in a bucket. On a train, you have one, technically three ways to get off that train. The front and rear of the car, and then you have the main sliding door, okay? So that's your entry and exit portals, those three. Unless you have a different type of train car, you may only have two or maybe four, right? But for this train, that's what it was. And launching the smoke grenade or whatever the device was, which you can buy that anywhere, to be honest with you. You can buy from airsoft stores semi-professional grade smoke grenades and flashbang devices. You can also get smoke grenades or some other type of explosive device from a firework stand. So I've had people saying, where did he get a smoke grenade? That's not hard. You can make a smoke grenade. Okay. If you were,
but is there anything in his background to suggest that he had the ability to do that?
Not
in the plan, in the plan to this level.
Not that I could really tell unless he was coached, which I think he was coached. I think he did the entire thing, but I think he was coached into what to do. Now, I say that because I say this, the average civilian does not know what a fatal funnel is. Do you know what a fatal funnel is?
Go ahead. No.
Okay. So any doorway going into a room within the realms of tactics, okay, so gunfighting tactics, law enforcement, military, when we go to a door, a doorway, we call that the fatal funnel because you have to go into that door or into that room via that doorway, unless you, you know, mechanically breach in another direction, but you have to go through this portal, this entry portal, which is that door. Anything that you do walking through that door, everything is an unknown if you can't clear it. So what does that mean? So that means I walk through something, I can't see to my far left, I can't see to my far right, or I don't know everything that's in the room because there may be things obscuring my line of sight. So coming into that door, everyone's going to know if you want to get into this room to come to me, you have to go through that door. So I know where to automatically point my gun at, right? The fatal funnel. The other part of being called the fatal funnel, and we experienced this in Iraq quite a bit, is that once you penetrate a room through the door and you start to take fire and there's more than one of you, somebody is going to more than likely, if they don't push all the way through the room and take command of the room, someone's going to trip. Someone's going to try and back out of the room. And that's when people run into each other. They fall over. And all I got to do is just point down at your fallen over bodies. Fatal funnel. Too easy. So smoke grenade, pushing people through the train car, through the fatal funnel. So that takes all these different people and they push them through something this wide. So people stumble, they stampede over themselves, they fall over themselves. And anyone whose back is exposed within my line of sight as I'm shooting. So watch this. Your average person being shot in the torso is because your arm goes this direction, right?
Okay. Okay.
So anyone who's shot in this direction is because of that. If they're falling on the ground or they're tumbling and they get shot in the leg, it's because now my eyes are picking up that now the easy targets are laying on the ground. So I'm going to shoot you on the ground. Okay. So when you have leg injuries within this incident, that's where that's coming from. My problem with some of that, and I have some really cool cats who listen to my show, who find stuff on the internet and send it to me. One of the guys sent me some stuff about this shooting, and it was videos of people applying tourniquets and applying pressure to gunshot wounds within the legs, within the abdomen area. But the person applying the pressure to a tourniquet, which would be within the leg area, I think it was this guy's right leg, there's no blood on the other guy's hands. So if you're gushing blood from a femoral artery, not only do you have between 45 seconds and 17 seconds to bleed out and die, but there should be copious amounts of red blood coming out. So I should see blood on hands, right? Especially if you're the one rendering aid. In multiple videos and multiple still shots, I didn't see it. So air for question, but hey, I'm not going to throw that one out, okay? That's just an observational tool that I have right now. That's something that I don't like to see. It makes me question a little bit, but I'll leave it for what it is. The other part is, if this guy has no military background, if this guy has no law enforcement background, okay, so let's get on to this one. Tactics. Where did he learn it? Black Liberation Army. We have known within the realms of the government, within the realms of law enforcement for years, and it has finally made its way onto the news, but very, very rarely and randomly, that there are extremists out there like sovereign citizens and people that are within a racially biased group. There are black groups that are out there and also whites, but they will go to a compound and they'll do their little tactical cool guy training. And in these camps, they are teaching people to become radicalized. There is a prevalent amount of black camps like that along the East Coast, from Georgia all the way up, that we know about, that I wonder if this guy was a part of. Now, that may or may not come out in the investigation. Who knows? But that's something that, because I have knowledge of that, I keep in the back of my mind. Where did you learn how to do that? Because you had to have practiced it. And here's the other part that I want to know, because he, like most active shooters, within the realms of active shooters, they will visit the target site once, twice, or three times and do a walkthrough, or what we would call a dry run.
Did we have that on camera then?
You would think. So before I cover the camera thing, let me finish this one. I want to know if he's monitored doing any type of dry runs. walking back and forth through the substation.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a big portion of these guys within the realms of active shooters and terrorist attacks where they will walk through that initial target site, find their targets, find out where it is that they want to do everything, talk with each other as they do it. So I would want to know if he is alone. Okay. But if he has someone else with him a couple days prior, did someone walk him through and show him what to do and where to do? That's a person of interest to me. Because yeah. This guy was sloppy. If he had shot over 30 rounds of ammunition, didn't kill anybody from what I saw, but we had at least 8 gunshot wounds, 16 others injured. Most likely that's going to be from shrapnel, or it's going to be from some sort of other injury, like I said, falling over one another, stampeding. He was terrible at it. It's too easy. You're within the realms of meters away from somebody. You should have easily wounded more, or you should have at least killed a couple if you're that close.
That's where his adrenaline took over, and he didn't have the training to overcome that.
Right.
I want to show you one thing here, Doug. I got to tell you, I'm shaking my head here, not at what you're saying. You're making perfect sense, but you're giving me the anatomy of a planned event. And let me just show you. You did the fatal funnel, okay? Let me show you this from the Kennedy assassination and tell me that this is not what you're talking about here. Let me take this off here. Okay, can you see this right here?
Yep.
Okay. Now, right here where my mouse is, that's a bus stop. Okay, Kennedy's limousine came up here like this, and he was to the left side. Oswald allegedly is right here. Now, let me just say this. 3 days before Kennedy came to Dallas, the Dallas police chief, Cabal, whose brother was the assistant director of the CIA, fired with Alan Dulles for Bay of Pigs. And then they changed the parade route rather than going down Main Street, which would have been right up here on the picture, okay, and he'd have been going 35 to 40 miles an hour. Here he goes right around here. This is your fatal frontal. There's your, whoops, I clicked off, but I think you see where I'm going with this. Okay, so let me bring us back here, okay? When you approach the book depository and you're turning, you're going 11 miles an hour, there's no escape. That's ducks in a bathtub. And there's no escape either way. They published the route. Now, there's some similarities I'm seeing from what you're talking about. Oswald allegedly, and I don't think it was him at all, he didn't shoot. He's down the road now before he opens fire 25, 30 yards. He missed the fatal funnel. That's why I said he wasn't the shooter. That's where the shot should have taken place. And what you're telling me here, this guy comes out, he's got the fatal funnel. Someone coached him on how to do that. Do you not agree?
Yeah, because you got to understand that within the realms of law enforcement, if you're a bad guy, you only have a couple minutes to commit your act. A couple minutes, especially in a city like New York, where law enforcement is over 30,000 of them. So they can be anywhere at any moment of time. Not to mention, you also have the undercover groups. So he's on a time constraint, which makes him a bit sloppy. Not knowing exactly what to do makes this look a little even more sloppy. But there are parts of this that seem to be very trained. And by trained, I say that I think this guy either well rehearsed what he was going to do, or he was coached into what to do, which could also be both. He could have been coached into what to do and also rehearsed it enough. I mean, think about it like this. If you really want to walk yourself through the situation, what I would do is I'd be on that same train for the pad that I want to use for my attack. If I want to initiate a smoke bomb, I'll just have an empty soda can that I will train my mind. I'll just throw it on the ground, and I'm going to watch what people do. More than likely, people are going to look down and go, "Hey, asshole, why'd you just litter?" People aren't going to do anything because most people don't understand. We're very reactionary creatures. Most people don't understand what's happening. Most people don't understand when they get punched in the face until the second or third one, you know? So even with the smoke bomb, you know what people do? Look at this guy. He throws a smoke bomb on the subway. You know, what kind of guy does something like that? And then bang, bang, bang. Now I'm no longer processing what type of an asshole this guy is. I'm processing, why am I hearing these shots?
Okay, I
and,
get it.
And here's part of another problem with active shooters. People have a problem with bringing to realization that they're listening to gunfire. This is a real thing, by the way. God, I can't remember which college shooting it was, but one of the major college shootings, it was with the Asian guy with the two pistols.
Was it Virginia Tech?
Virginia Tech, the Virginia Tech shooter. Mm-hmm. If you listen to many of the victims, they thought it was two pieces of wood being clanked together down the hallway. Okay. They could not process why in a college setting they would be hearing gunfire.
They the never context is all wrong. You're right.
Yeah, they
in
didn't.
The, in the Kennedy assassination, they thought it was firecrackers until his head came off.
Right.
So you're exactly right on that. You know, another thing too, this is one thing I've, pardon me, as we process this.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
All right. Thank God for the cough buttons, right? But one of the things I've learned as I've studied assassinations, and I talked to Cyril Weck before he died, and great pathologist, analyzed the major assassinations of the 60s, the expert. And one of the things I learned from him, he came across a manual called the CIA Manual for Assassinations of Foreign Leaders. And it was basically how we get the bodyguard to be compromised. Okay, that doesn't come into play in this case. But what they also said is, you want to get people going through what you described as the fatal funnel. He called it a narrow passageway. And he said that most of your assassinations are targeted that way. You're not shooting the guy when he's given a speech. You're shooting the guy as he's transporting from A to B and there's no way out. And if you think about the Bobby Kennedy assassination, they didn't shoot him when he was on stage. He got shot as he was going to the kitchen in a very confined area that you didn't have 3 feet to either side. It's the same thing you're saying with the fatal funnel. And I've looked at assassinations that have taken place in the past, and a lot of them share this characteristic. So he may not have had the sophistication, but someone taught him what you just said. I think this fatal funnel thing is a big deal. I think, Doug, you're right on the money with this.
Well, it's a trained tactic that works. It was Sirhan when he tried to when he shot Reagan, he was getting into the car.
You mean Hinckley?
Yeah, yeah. Whenever he was, Reagan was, he was around the car when he was doing it. So, you know, there are times when you can catch people off guard.
That's right.
And, you know, moving in and out of a passageway, COVID, nobody wants to touch anybody, you know, stay 6 feet away. I got my mask. I'm on the subway, so I'm just going to look down at my phone. I'm not going to pay attention. If you're a predatory animal and you pick up the traits of your prey, well, the day you go to strike, they're not going to know what happens.
That's exactly right. You are right on the money with this. And here's another thing. You're right. When did Reagan get shot? He got shot as he was getting into the car and there's not a foot on either side.
Yeah.
There's no way out. And you've got it nailed in what you said. By the way, this speaks to the fact that Hinckley was trained to do what he did, or at least programmed to do what he did. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't put anything past this. I mean, you were talking about who was the CIA director that was involved with that? Ellis? I think it was Ellis. He was the one who created Mockingbird and MKUltra. You know, these guys, they've been around for decades, involved in operations that you as the United States senator, congressman, president, don't have the ability to ask. You can't get into the budget. You can't access these special access programs. You can't know the sources and the methods. So more or less, it's a shadow army doing whatever they want with an unlimited budget. And if you dare talk about it, if you dare get outside the norm, well, you get a visit. And the visitor is never the CIA. The visitor is who the CIA paid. And the visitor could be someone who T-boned you. The visitor could be, you know, anything that you can think of, right? So we have to understand within the realms of this crazy world that we live in, that there are other possibilities out there besides just an angry old racist guy who wants to kill white people. The internet and the news will always tell you the most plausible story for you to deny in your mind that there's anything else. This is cut and dry what it was because it's the news and they're not going to lie to me. And they get it straight from NYPD. And that's just what it is. Case closed. And we know that's a lie.
Do we know this guy's low functioning like IQ? Do we have any idea?
I would say from the way, and this is just my analyzing through years of experience of doing this, he's just your average person. He's your average 55, 60-year-old man. We would call him crazy because he's walking down the street and he's filming people and just, you know, yelling out racial rhetorics to anybody who's around him. You know, that's your average crazy person, right? You could probably sit there and have a half sane conversation with them, but you have to be in a very strange mindset already in order to want to be a part of the Black Panther movement or the Black Liberation Army movement, to be a part of a communist anti-white movement.
But Doug, I don't think those groups had anything to do with this.
No. Well, so
other than shaping his mentality.
Besides the mentality, the only thing where I will say that I think they may have had a hand in it is the training. They do involve themselves in this training for extremists, and they do train groups of people, families of people like this. So, like I said, there could be a possibility of a connection to that. But other than that, he's just your average crazy older guy. I've met plenty of them from every walk of life, every race, you know, every religion. I have seen the nutcases of them all. And the thing about this guy is you would not recognize him as a threat. More than likely, you would just move away from him and say, he's annoying. He's worrying me, but he's not viewed as a threat. He's not 6 foot tall, has a gorgeous beard, and, you know, covered in tattoos. You know, he's just your 5'5", overweight older guy. You know, okay. Probably like a type 2 diabetic. You wouldn't process that as a threat.
Now, I absolutely have to defer to your professional experience on this. The only thing I can bring into this is history. But there is a dot that I think that we need to look at. Can it connect? And I'll tell you why I made the statement. I don't think these radicalized groups were responsible and put him up to this and trained him. That's my gut feeling. Let me tell you why I believe this. The kidnapping plot for Gretchen Whitmer never sounded right to me, the governor of Michigan. I always said, this sounds like total BS. And they didn't get one conviction on this. And now the guy that was the lead federal investigator for the FBI is kicked out of the FBI for beating his wife because she wouldn't do couple swapping. I mean, this is just so bizarre. But these guys, there were more FBI agents involved in this alleged plot to kidnap Whitmer than there were people accused of the crime. It was clearly entrapment in my mind by the FBI. Okay, now take this. When you were speaking, I wrote this down right here on a sheet of paper. Coached Whitmer, exclamation mark. I think there is a political purpose here. I think this guy was coached and rudimentarily changed. I mean, poor training, but he certainly knew, as you talked about, how to attack, how to use the smoke grenade. And do you smell a federal agency here at work, like I think was at work with Whitmer's fake plot?
So the FBI is very notorious for every Wednesday busting a new Islamic terrorist online. And it's because they go into online forums and talk to people and to see who is perceiving or perceptible to any type of conversation about extremism or whatever. And they lead people on, and then they set people up, and then they spring on them and they arrest them and say, oh, look, we saved the world from another Islamic extremist. In Oklahoma, the best setting for this, in Oklahoma, I think it's Oklahoma City, a young man who has clinical psychosis. He'd already been in a psychiatric ward in and out since he was 16. He had schizophrenia, an extremely severe case of schizophrenia. He was going to live with his mom and dad for his entire life. He was not allowed to drive a car, not allowed to own a weapon, like legally not allowed to, because he's not mentally capable of functioning. Can't own a bank account, can't work a job, can't do nothing, right? And however it was, the FBI started to communicate with him over the internet. And then they wanted this guy to meet. And then they eventually said, because he was a person who had severe psychiatric problems, you know, he would say just really random things on the internet, and the FBI caught it. And then they started spinning this kid. And eventually what ended up happening was the FBI informant came to the house. The father intercepted this guy, told this guy to leave his son alone. Don't contact them. Don't ever come back on this house property ever again. Well, the FBI is persistent. And so was their informant. Their informant finds a way back on the home, takes the kid, who was like 18 at the time or 20, takes him out of the home, puts him in a van. He doesn't have a driver's license, by the way. Puts him in a van with a supposed explosive ordnance inside the van to go park it out in front of like a bank. In order to blow up a bank. And then they swooped in and arrested him. Oh, look, we saved the day. And the family was actually able to legally sue the FBI and win that case because they harassed their son into doing it. If it wasn't for the fact that it was documented by the family, they would not have gotten away with that prosecution. However, because it was documented, they were able to save their son for that. But the FBI, slap on the hand, try again. So there are possibilities of this. Yeah,
you're the investigator, okay? What happened with this guy? If you were to say, okay, we're going to go down this avenue, investigate what my gut tells me we should investigate based on what we know. What's the real story behind this?
I would just want to know motives. First off,
but then you'd have to know who trained him and put him up to it.
Well, that's stuff through the investigation process that we would learn. You know, he didn't suicide by cop. He didn't blow himself up. There were secondary and tertiary explosive IED devices, improvised explosive devices that were found. How the hell did you figure out how to make that? And at
Not
that point,
he did.
Well, and at that point, I would be asking if I was there, and I'm sure the NYPD bomb department's out there, and so was the FBI bomb techs, who are great people, by the way. You can say what you want about the FBI. The bomb techs are awesome, really great, nerdy people. But I would want to know, and you won't know this because it'll be confidential, but I'd want to know what that device was, how it was made, was it professionally made from someone who knew what they were doing, or was it just thrown together? If it was just thrown together, then okay, there's more credibility to this just being a crazy guy. If it was professionally made and handed to somebody, which means if it was professionally made, the devices would have went off. And if they went off, there would have been a copious amount of shrapnel, which means there would have been a proper detonation. There would have been a proper ignition source, proper shrapnel, proper explosion for a certain diameter. It would have actually worked. But because nothing exploded and everything was found, I would say, were they more smoke bombs? Were they, stuff that were devices that didn't go off? Or was it stuff just made to look like a IED? And I've dealt with those before, in my previous job. And there are people who are just crazy enough to, take a bag of Doritos and throw an old clock in it and stick some wires out of it and duct tape it and throw it down by a trash can. And as a trained cop, you go, that's a bomb, because I've been told for years that's what bombs look like. So, you have that dilemma, you have that problem. But if he had shot 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 people, if he had devices that went off, if he didn't call and say, hey, this is Frank, I heard you're looking for me, I would be having more questions. Or excuse me, I would say I would be having less questions. But because this guy did everything that he did, I have way more questions. Way more questions. Because there's a level of sophistication that's missing here. And the sophistication level comes from the perpetrator. He is not, from what I can tell, purely based off what I could tell, I haven't seen anything about the investigation, and I won't because I'm not law enforcement anymore. But based off of just what I can find, I'm very surprised this guy was able to do what he did.
Okay, here's my response. His expertise doesn't reflect the level of attempted sophistication of this crime. Explosive devices that don't go off, smoke grenades being used, a proper hit technique attacks, as you have alluded to. So he was a misfit for the sophistication of the crime that's being set up. That speaks to pretty high level coaching. That's what that tells me. Am I off base here? Because that's what my logic tells me here.
That's the one who rode that train with him.
Yeah, I would agree with you. He may not have acted alone. But here's the other thing that gets me. Is there a Manchurian candidate quality to turning yourself in?
No. Typically, it's the Aurora shooter.
Dazed and confused.
Right. Yeah. I don't know where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what would cause him to turn himself in? That's why I asked if he had low IQ. I mean, these are the things that I've been wondering about as I learn these facts. Turning yourself in after you're a mass murderer doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense to me.
Well, there are deals. Let's just go Hollywood here for a second, right? It's not far-fetched to say, hey, if you help us do this, which helps us push our gun and ban initiative, then we'll put you up in a certain prison in a certain area of the prison where you'll be left alone, and we'll pay your family member so much. And then after a while, we'll either say that you did do it or that you didn't do it. Depends on how you play ball with us. And, then you may be moved to a mental institution, and 5 or 6 years later, you'll be, let out. But we'll take care of you. Are those possibilities out there? They sound a little Hollywoodish, but don't think they're not pliable. So I always keep these thoughts in the back of my mind when I see stuff like this, just because of my background of what I understand. But at the same time, you got to also realize that with all these big incidents that are happening, there are more vicious attacks that happen throughout the United States every single day than what you saw in Brooklyn, and they're never televised, ever. They're not talked about. They're not even mentioned.
Probably because they don't fit the demographics that you need.
Yeah, because it's normal, everyday stuff within the locality.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking by the border and Chicago, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Portland, Seattle, California. There are plenty of places, Detroit, there are plenty of places out there that have an epidemic of crime, gang on gang, where, 20, 30 people will be shot in one sitting. It doesn't even make a highlight reel.
I agree. I totally agree with what you're saying. Here's the other question I would have to ask. My unsophisticated crime scene mind would say this. If this is indeed a setup, and I think there's enough there to at least say it needs to be looked at, then what was the distraction that was needed on that day? To what end was this carried out? Are we just supposed to believe this is a crazed shooter? Here's why I don't think this is a crazed madman, Doug. I'll go back to what I said earlier. The level of sophistication that accompanied the crime was not matched by the perpetrator.
Day prior of the shooting, Biden talked about the gun ban.
That's right. Exactly. The ghost guns. Yep.
The next day, this guy who I'll be shocked if he has a ghost gun, which is a polymer 80, which is an 80% polymer lower receiver or the lower assembly of a pistol. It means nothing. It does nothing. It's what the trigger housing sets in and then what the slide sets on. So it does nothing. But I'll be shocked. And then I'll also be shocked if he had a 30-round magazine, for which is what I'm guessing is probably also a Glock that he was shooting. Those things, if those come out to be true, the narrative was wrote and he was an actor for that play.
I agree.
Yeah.
Either his Facebook posts were fabricated for this purpose, or they found him and said he fits the purpose. Yeah. So you think it's possible, and you're not the only one to suggest this, that the timing of his event could indeed be linked to give justification to what Biden is saying about ghost guns?
Never let a good crisis go to waste.
There you go. Thank you, Eric Holder. Wow. This is fascinating stuff. Only thing is, here we're at the end of the show, and what we've done is ask questions. that's what we've done. I think there's more that's going to come out because this was sloppy.
Yeah,
I think there's more details are going to come out. This was not a well-executed event. It almost smells like this was put together in haste. That's the sense I get.
Well, you know what I would love to see too is, you have your psychology background. I have a law enforcement military background. I would love to see another law enforcement professional and another person who's a psychological professional get together, just like me and you just did. Give us your thoughts. See if you come to a different conclusion.
Sure.
This is what America is missing, is this type of interaction from professionals within this workforce. I'm sure you see all different types of signs of MHMR with this guy, or some sort of a psychological issue with this guy. And me in law enforcement, I see a lot of tactics here that if he has no tactics, I have to ask, where'd you learn it?
How did he go undiscovered that long if they had his picture and they knew who they were looking for? They had his name. That's really bad. That's a bad manhunt.
I don't know.
Do you not agree that's a bad manhunt?
Yeah.
Because you go to the guy's place. Who are his relatives? Who are his friends? Look at his social media. Look at his text messages on his phone. You go to all the locations. The guy can only hide in so many places, right?
New York's a big city. If you want to hide, you'll hide. Best way to hide is
throw your phone away.
Yeah.
Hey, what we didn't get to, and we're going to have to make it part two. We didn't get to the DHS impersonators, which I think is a very big deal.
It is a very big deal. Yeah.
So I'll be in touch with you tomorrow to set that up.
Okay.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us here. And we just thought it was important to kick this around. He's the expert. Okay. But I'm just asking questions as they come up with common sense. But thank you for educating me on that term, the fatal funnel. I understand the concept. I just never heard the term before, but it fits so many assassination events. It really does. That was worth the price of admission for me. What do you want to bet the guy does a plea deal and we never hear another word about this?
That's $10.
Yeah, that's what I think too. Okay, Doug, I'll be in touch with you. We'll set up part two and we'll look at the DHS guy. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us here on the commonsenseshow.tv. We'll see you back here again next time. Thanks, Doug.
Hey, Dave.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.